Welcome to the Ambulatory Healthcare Today podcast, hosted by the NextGen Advisors. Accelerate your success with insights from a multidisciplinary team of healthcare experts as they discuss an array of topics. These timely discussions can help you better navigate the challenges of running your ambulatory care practice. Here is your host.
Hello, this is Graham Brown, Senior Vice President and Principal with the NextGen Advisors. Joining me on today's podcast is Melissa Giampietri, as well as my colleague and fellow NextGen Advisor, Dr. Marty Lustig. Welcome, Melissa and Marty.
Thank you.
Thanks, Graham. Great to be here.
Melissa, you're new to our podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
Thanks, Graham. Yeah, so I serve as the Behavioral Health Specialty Director at NextGen here. I've spent nearly 20 years in the behavioral health space, nearly half of that working for a large community behavioral health center in Portland, Oregon, in service delivery and management roles, before I pivoted to the world of healthcare technology, specifically focusing on supporting behavioral health and human service organizations.
It's wonderful background for today's topic, so we're glad to have you here. You know, as NextGen's a leading integrated care solutions provider, and we commonly hear stories about integration from many behavioral health organizations we speak and partner with. That story is that they've attempted to stand up a primary care practice and often have hired a few primary care physicians and nurses, but are barely surviving financially, or have had to close the practice due to it not being sustainable financially. Many we find are still struggling with two separate delivery systems within their four walls, or have ill-equipped technology to support both behavioral health and primary care services efficiently and effectively. Some organizations decide that partnering with a local federally qualified health center for a co-location model is best due to the challenges of building a sustainable and flourishing practice. In many cases, providers aren't satisfied, though, with co-location models because the delivery system remains siloed to various degrees, so they're in need of a better solution. Let's discuss two main options for such groups to consider. Choosing to either partner with a federally qualified health center who provide comprehensive primary care services today, or to build primary care services internally. Melissa, we're going to start with you. What would you say are the pros and cons of each of those models?
Graham, I would say that the pros of partnering with an FQHC is that it's a contractual relationship and the behavioral health organization isn't in a position to have to take on the risk associated with providing primary care services, both clinically and financial risk. In terms of CCBHCs, Certified Community Behavioral Health Centers, they commonly refer to this model as designated collaborative organizations, so DCOs. And so many organizations do opt to leverage that model, because again, they're not taking on that additional risk. Many behavioral health executive teams are individuals that have behavioral health degrees and have really been brought up through the ranks of behavioral health. This can really be considered an ideal model for many of these organizations with those leadership teams, given that they don't have the background and acumen to really operationalize and build primary care practices. The con is that this can result in what continues to be a siloed delivery system, even with the co-location models, without true collaboration at the point of care, with two separate EHR systems, since in many cases, the primary care providers that are working on site, but ultimately working for the FQHC, must use the FQHC's EHR in order to bill for services. The pro of developing primary care internally is that it's much easier to fully integrate teams working for the same company with the same internal processes and technology. This model makes it much easier to really materialize the integrated whole person care vision that impacts both body and mind at the point of care by teams working together side by side and information being combined in an EHR with, for example, psychotropic medications and physical health medications. Being in the same system and interactions and contraindications being checked, it's a way that's just more integrated and provides optimal, more safe care that results in better outcomes. The con of this model is that organizations must make sure that they have the right expertise to operationalize primary care within their organization, hiring the right roles to support it, both from a clinical quality and a revenue cycle management perspective. And really, in addition, lead a change management process that considers the differences in culture and what can be very different paradigms from what are from two very different approaches to care that have been really siloed for decades.
Mm-hmm. Marty, what would you add to the pros and cons that Melissa just identified for us?
I think Melissa actually covered the critical elements of both of these models. I would just reinforce a couple of the points that she made. One, I really think either model can be made to work, and both have create opportunity and risk as with regards to what you need to manage in order to be successful. You know, the research that's been done in this area has shown pretty conclusively that co-location accomplishes almost nothing. You know, the challenge of contracting is that it's almost too easy for a behavioral health organization to contract with an FQHC to have them, you know, each provide their own expertise without being forced to change the way they think about and do their own work in their own area. Whereas the building it yourself really forces you if you're to learn the other area, wherever, whichever place you're starting at. It doesn't mean you can't make it work through a contract, but it's really important to lay a foundation, have a vision, and be committed in each organization, not just to having this agreement on paper, and but actually to change the way you practice. Something as simple as that the behavioral health team has screening for physical illness as a standard part of their assessment that then gets referred back to primary care and vice versa. You know, that's a tiny first step in integration, but even things as simple as that, if you don't have those conversations before you sign the contract, you really haven't really confronted the major issues that are ahead of you.
Mm-hmm. There's a longstanding historic separation of mental health or behavioral health services from physical care services in the delivery system in the United States. It's really only in the past few decades that we've seen a shift to integrated whole person care. What are your recommendations on truly bridging the divide with regard to delivery system differences to promote highly collaborative or integrated care? Marty?
Yeah, I'd start where I just left off, that focusing on culture is probably a critical first step in this, that the behavioral health and physical medicine have been so separated for so long that they really do have unique cultures in the way they think about how their day goes, the way they think about what constitutes managing their patients, how they document. Every aspect of the way they do their work is built over a long period of time in a culture that's within their own area. And they really need to spend time together to understand how they work differently. The pace of work is very different. Primary care is one of the, you know, highest volume throughput specialties out there, and behavioral health is not. And just that difference really requires an appreciation and understanding of what that means for how they interact with each other and how they include each other in care. Another major category is the way these areas are regulated. And, you know, the regulations, unfortunately, over the years have kind of, in many ways, reinforced the separation of the two. In many states, behavioral health has a separate regulatory body from physical health at the state level. And so trying to get consistent regulations for something as simple as, you know, can a behavioral health provider practice in a primary care practice under the supervision of a primary care provider rather than having to be under the supervision of a behavioral health provider if they're an intermediate level provider. That varies by state, whether that's even allowed or not. So there are, you know, regulatory issues to overcome in order to really achieve true integration. And tied to that is differences in the way they're paid. You know, a well-functioning behavioral health organization actually has no idea how to contract and bill for physical medicine services and vice versa. And the health plans take very different approaches to the way they pay. And it's particularly with FQHCs, they're paid in a very unique, different way than a behavioral health organization would be. So lots of major issues to overcome to make this work.
Melissa, what are some of your recommendations around bridging this divide?
As part of program development and operationalization, it is important to include primary care experts in the appropriate divisions of an organization. The quality department to ensure that physical health compliance and quality measures are being captured. Perhaps hire a medical director on the primary care side of things. Hire a primary care billing expert to add to a billing RCM team to ensure that there's appropriate coding and that the program is ultimately profitable. It's important also to have an IT governance structure and a team that works to develop workflows in an EHR in the technology that support both primary care providers and behavioral health providers, and train those providers on how to leverage tools, not only to document services, but to leverage technology to provide truly collaborative communication. Finding an EHR that supports both complex behavioral health organizations and complex and growing primary care practices can be very challenging. It's important to find a solution that supports encounter-based care in a robust manner, as well as episodic programmatic-based care delivery across the continuum of care, which is really needed to support complex behavioral health organizations. In addition to that, as Marty said, you do need technology that also supports the regulatory environments for behavioral health and for primary care to ensure that you're in compliance, are able to pass audits on both sides, and are just meeting those requirements.
Mm-hmm. Hearing both of you, there's a huge amount of complexity now when we really think about the fundamental differences of these two types of practice coming together and working in concert. Certainly organizations might want to consider some support and expertise in helping advance their planning on this journey. The NextGen advisors and other consultancies provide that kind of support to organizations, kind of go through a process to help with the business planning that speaks to kind of various different phases of how you go from where you are today to an integrated model in the future. And just briefly, those look at doing an assessment of current state services, staffing models, the types of population that you're serving, and understanding what their needs are with regard to either adding behavioral health services or adding primary care services to your mix. Then to some of Marty's points, really doing some strategy development and timeline planning. What are the resources you need to bring into your organization? How do you want to go about doing that? Are you going to partner with an FQHC, as we've discussed, or are you going to start recruiting those staff members, some of that back office capability around coding, billing management? And understand then what the detailed kind of budget and feasibility of this new model of care is going to be like. That all kind of culminates then in kind of a business plan that helps the leadership team move that documentation and kind of the initiative up through its approval processes, whether that's with a board or with funders or to seek payment opportunities with other funding agencies, really help them move into this model in the future. Melissa, from your experience, maybe help us understand how the kind of planning activity that we just outlined informs ultimately what the care team's going to look like. What are some of the roles and capabilities that you recommend an organization ensures they're developing so that they get to this model of sustainable financial operations?
Yeah, Graham. I would say that hiring a consultant can be extremely helpful in this process, you know, as you mentioned, and really doing a full workflow analysis from that initial referral through the entire client lifecycle, if you will, in terms of looking at, you know, from the front end to the back end processes all the way through revenue cycle and billing. And so doing that analysis is an important step from patient registration to intake to scheduling. There's very different processes that are involved in primary care versus behavioral health. And so instead of making discoveries later and running into issues later, it's really important to think through these things up front. One thing that we see is organizations thinking that a technology solution will help them operationalize integrated care. Well, yes, it can if you have the right technology. But most importantly, you have to fully operationalize the workflows prior to finding the technology that ultimately provides solutions to what you have developed from a workflow perspective. So in meeting the clients where they are. So being able to assess for behavioral health needs in primary care and vice versa. And, you know, it's also no easy task to find an integrated electronic health record that is able to support all of the workflows on both sides in a meaningful way. In addition to that, an integrated care plan for the client is important in terms of ensuring that interdisciplinary teams on the primary care side, as well as the behavioral health side, are all contributing to an interdisciplinary integrated care plan that is required in behavioral health.
Marty, what would you add to that?
So just to reinforce a couple of points that Melissa made, one is with regards to the collaboration that needs to take place at a clinical level. Because there's a long history of a lack of that collaboration, this is an issue that requires time and energy on the practicing provider's part in order to overcome and get to true collaboration. Things like reviewing cases, complex cases together at lunchtime, having grand rounds on cases where they're complex on both the behavioral health and the medical physical health issues. Those are critical to building a common understanding, a way of talking about these patients in an integrated way. And then at the same time, it needs to be tied to sort of you get what you measure. You need key performance indicators where you're actually measuring collaboration. What percent of the patients in the behavioral health team are getting referred? You know, are we doing a physical screening on every behavioral health patient that comes in? Are we doing a behavioral health screening on the primary care side? You know, what's the cross referral rates? What are the goals we have for cross referral rates? Starting to actually measure the nuts and bolts of what it looks like when you're truly integrated is really critical to get there. And that's aside from all the infrastructure that you need to enable this that Melissa was speaking about. The one other thing I would add in terms of infrastructure is that if you're moving in this direction, having a population health platform that's integrated with the rest of your software within your organization becomes critical to actually tracking these critical performance indicators and evaluating and managing your patients effectively.
Thanks, Marty. Helpful info. Melissa, I think given our time, final question to you. There's a number of programs at the federal and state level that are focused on advancing integrated care delivery in the ambulatory setting. Maybe talk a little bit about some of the key programs that practices would want to consider either for support or in terms of a different financial payment model that might make this type of care delivery more sustainable.
Sure. First, there's the CCBHC model, the Certified Community Behavioral Health Center clinic model, that is a specially designated clinic that provides a comprehensive range of both mental health and substance use services. As an integrated and sustainably financed model for care delivery, really the goals of the CCBHC model are to ensure adequate access for clients being served. So ensuring access to integrated evidence-based SUD and mental health services. In addition to that, including a 24/7 crisis response service, as well as medication-assisted treatment for folks with opiate use disorders and other kinds of addictions that require that. It also includes stringent criteria regarding timeliness of access, quality reporting, staffing, coordination with social services, criminal justice, and education systems. These organizations receive funding to support the real cost of expanding services to fully meet the need for care in their communities. Today, there's actually more than 430 CCBHCs that are operating in 42 states, and a growing number of states are moving to implement this model, really similar to the other value-based or alternative payment models, independently via a state plan amendment or Medicaid waiver. The FQHC model, or the federally qualified health centers, model are community-based healthcare providers that receive funds from HRSA health center programs to provide primary care services in underserved areas. They must meet a stringent set of requirements that are including primary care on a sliding fee scale, really based on ability to pay, and operating under a governing board that includes patients. Federally qualified health centers may be community health centers, they could be migrant health centers, healthcare for the homeless, and health centers for residents of public housing. As a leading integrated care technology provider, we support many behavioral health organizations that are on their journeys to becoming integrated care providers. One trend that we're seeing is that many CCBHCs are looking to additionally gain their FQHC status, and there's many reasons for this. One trend that we've seen in particular is CCBHCs gaining FQHC status because in some states, they're able to get up to 30% more revenue by gaining their FQHC status. We're also seeing FQHCs that are developing large behavioral health divisions and are additionally seeking to become CCBHCs. So we're really seeing this both ways, and many CCBHCs start their integrated care journey with a DCO model where they do partner with an FQHC. They do have co-location models, and that is in some cases one step on their journey, and ultimately have it on their strategic plans to develop integrated care capabilities internally and grow really an FQHC.
Excellent. It's a great summary. Thank you very much, Melissa. There's a number of options, as we've discussed here, for practices to think about on this journey to integrated care. Hope this has been a helpful discussion for our listeners. I'd like to thank our guests, Melissa Giampietri and Dr. Marty Lustig, for joining me today on this important topic. This is Graham Brown with NextGen Healthcare. Thank you and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Ambulatory Healthcare Today podcast, hosted by the NextGen Advisors. Never miss an episode by subscribing at nextgen.com/podcast. To see a list of products and services tailored for ambulatory care practices, visit nextgen.com.